Just so everybody knows, on the record, I'm talking to Doug in Paris. Well, Doug's in Paris. I'm here in Indianapolis. What are you working on over there, my friend?
Hey. Well, I am here in Paris, France, working on a movie called Serge Gainsbourg, Vie Héroïque, which means A Life Heroic. It is a biography on the life of singer-songwriter icon in the French culture, Serge Gainsbourg. And I'm playing a fantasy element in the film. I'm like an alter ego sort of fantasy character that only exists for him. He sees me, hears me, talks to me, and no one else can.
So this is riding the La Vie en Rose success wagon?
Sure. Sure. Well, actually, the French have been making movies for a long time, though, I hear.
No, really? About musicians?
Yeah.
Get out.
They might have even started it. I'm not sure.
Wow. We'll have to work on that.
I know, right? But it's being the fun thing about this one is that I'm wearing a big makeup again that makes me look like someone that I'm not. And it's being applied by, it was created by the DDT Effectos Especiales. That's the team that brought you the Fawn from Pan's Labyrinth,
uh-huh.
and also the Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth. So I've worked with them before.
It's got to be nice to have a rapport with a group like that. It must be easier as far as application and working relations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like getting together with old friends. I love them dearly, and I trust them. And you know what? When you're in a makeup chair for 5 hours at a time, the people who are you've entrusted to, yourself to their hands, it's important that you do trust them.
Mm-hmm.
And we do get along really well, and they're kind of like nurse. It's like I become a nursing home patient because I can't see or hear for myself, and I can feel very little. And so these people are more than just makeup artists. They're also caregivers, you know.
What do you do in the 5 hours? Because the most I've ever had to sit in a makeup chair was 45 minutes, and I thought I was going to rip my hair out.
Yeah, I know. Well, I get asked this a lot, but I'm not even sure. I think I'm really good at zoning out. I do fall asleep a lot. If there's a headrest, I'm we're all screwed. We'll listen to music. We might even pop open a laptop and watch silly things on YouTube. Talk and tell stories, of course. You know, I don't know.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at here. You're a Bishop grad.
Bishop Chittard High School, yes.
And in Ball State.
Back in 1978.
That's not a curse word. It's okay.
Okay.
Now, you study theater at Ball State as well as telecommunications. Now, I have to ask, because this is a Wikipedia thing. I had it. Mime and contortionist?
Oh, does Wikipedia have that all listed?
Yes,
really?
Yes, it does. I say
they are the encyclopedia.
And you would have been very popular at Ball State if you had both of those in your system.
I was doing all that at Ball State, and yes, I was popular. I can put both my legs behind my head, and it's actually come in very handy over the years, especially when I was doing a lot of TV commercials at the beginning of my career. If they needed some kind of a sight gag or something, we need something physical, something funny, and in an audition, if I threw my leg over my head, it's like, well, that's it, cast him. So that was kind of an easy. That was my. But I'm a one trick pony when it comes to contorting. I'm not. I don't have a circus act.
You're not in the sideshow. No.
Right. No. Okay. The mime thing started at Ball State University. I joined my freshman year there. I joined a mime troupe called Mime Over Matter.
Oh.
You get it?
Dun 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 dun. Dun.
Whap! But that actually was a very useful art form for me, as it turns out. I've always kind of been a talker with my hands as well as my mouth. And learning the art of mime, it really kind of woke up the storytelling senses that happened from the neck down. You know, body language tells so much of the story and gesturing and all of that. So when you're using an art form that doesn't use dialogue, verbal dialogue at all, you have to rely on all the physical dialogue. So that's kind of what was a great background for me to, you know, get into the kind of acting that I'm known for now, which is more of the creature effects, costume, fantasy characters.
You're the fantasy that guy.
Are you pointing right now?
Yeah, he's that guy. Yeah, I pointed
guy.
When I told people I was talking to you.
At Ball State, any theater that I did was either with the mime troupe, which was all physical, And I didn't do any plays that were the standard, you know, Chekhov or, you know, whatever, Shakespeare. No, that wasn't my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Standing and emoting, for doing monologues wasn't what I was. I never did it back then.
But Lear needed to throw his legs back behind his head, couldn't he?
As any good king would do, sure.
So after Ball State, where'd you go next?
Well, I went up to North Manchester, Indiana, and I'm lying to you. First stop was Kings Island in Cincinnati, Ohio, as a mime. I worked on the streets there of the theme park around the Eiffel Tower. Now, talk about coming full circle. Now I'm sitting here at a hotel where I can look out and see the Eiffel Tower, the real one.
Of course.
Here in Paris, yeah. So, and the Eiffel Tower in Cincinnati, though, at Kings Island, is about a third of the scale of this one. So seeing the real one is quite different.
Indeed.
And after that summer of 1982, it was up to North Manchester, Indiana, to work at a newspaper there as an advertising salesman. And I thought that I was going to slip my wrist because I was, you know, wearing a tie and being responsible is just not my thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, off to California to work at a bank as a management trainee. That was basically the excuse to get us out to California.
Right.
You know. By that time, I was married to the lovely Mrs. Laurie.
Hello.
Also a Ball State graduate.
Woo-hoo.
In 1984. And we just moved out to California in 1985.
And how did you lead up to the newly deads?
Yeah.
Research.
Oh, my God. Well, thank you for bringing up the most embarrassing credit on my entire IMDb list.
That's the one?
I think that is by far. That was one of those straight-to-VHS releases, you know. I think it was 86 or 7, yeah.
But it's not going to make the transfer of the DVD?
Oh, heck no. They made the whole movie for $1.75. It was shot on 16-millimeter film. Oh, just so cheesy. Horribly written, horribly acted by all of us. I'm going to include myself. but if you like low budget hideous horror movies, that's the one to see.
Maybe it'll be a Mystery Science Theater someday. Well, no, not anymore.
Oh no, it's great fun to watch to pop in the Newly Deads with a bunch of sarcastic, funny people sitting watching it because the dialogue of the film doesn't even matter.
But isn't it true Tim Burton saw it and said brilliant, and then he casted you later on?
Yeah, that's how it went. No, you big silly. No, I met Tim Burton on Batman Returns. Actually, I was called into the stunt office because of the contortion thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I put my legs behind my head. One of the people on their stunt team knew of me and gave me a call just to come and. They could put me on videotape to you know, put my legs on. Because there was a circus theme to Batman Returns.
Right.
You know, the Penguin hung out with the Red Triangle Circus Gang. And so while I was there, the stunt coordinator saw what I did, and he said, hang on just a second. He went to the next room and brought Tim Burton back in with him and said, do what you just did for me. This is Tim Burton, the director. I'm like, hi, Tim. So, yeah, that was a wonderful break for me. One of many breaks over the years.
And I say, what's the percentage of acting jobs where you have and have not had to have lots and lots of makeup?
Probably, it's like about two-thirds of my work has been under heavy makeup and about a full third of it is with my own face.
Mm-hmm.
And this past year especially, I've aside from the movie I'm working on right now, the full year before this was all my own face. I did a guest starring gig on Criminal Minds that aired just in December before I came here. I did an episode of Fear Itself on NBC. It was a great horror show at night, like a one-hour anthology kind of show where every episode was like a Twilight Zone, a whole new story, whole new cast, all that.
Right.
And I've done lots of other films in the meantime, one of which was filmed right there in Indiana at the Ball State campus and surrounding area in Muncie, Indiana. Called My Name is Jerry. I played the title character of Jerry, a 40-something-year-old white guy going through his midlife crisis.
Wow.
Which I could relate to, by the way, Matt.
That's a stretch. Really.
I'm pushing 50 now, so yes, I can relate.
That's a whole other stress. Well, not only do you – I was asking about the percentage, but also you get to actually act with other people for a change. Or do you – I mean, is it a lot of green and blue screen work for you?
Oh, no. I've always acted with other people on screen. I've never done motion capture, which is what you might be thinking of.
Okay.
When you're wearing like a really green colored leotard with dots all over it, and just for the computer animators to have some movement.
Fun at parties.
The leotard with dots on it, that
yep.
is fun. Especially when people have markers and they're connecting the dots, right?
Touché.
But I've never done that. I've always worn makeups, and there might be some CG enhancement later, such as happened with the Silver Surfer when I did the Fantastic Four sequel. Playing the Silver Surfer, I was in a makeup and costume every day that looked like the Silver Surfer. I was H.O.T. hot. Can I tell you that?
Yeah, and I was very impressed that you were able to dip your voice down to sound like Lawrence Fishburne.
Wasn't that great of me?
It was.
Actually, I wish you could have heard. I dipped my voice down to affect a Silver Surfer voice of my own that everybody told me was fantastic, including directors, producers, and my castmates. Jessica Alba loved my voice.
Really? So, tell me again, slowly.
Yeah, she did. What's that?
Tell me again, slowly.
Slowly, I know. It's like, Jessica Alba really liked my low voice. But, of course, as marketing a multi-million dollar comic book franchise film like that, these studio execs were, you know, doing what marketing people do, which was to try to sell the film. And if getting, you know, Morpheus to voice the Silver Surfer, well, then, you know, then you get Lawrence Fishburne.
Fair enough. How did you meet up with Guillermo del Toro? Because you're now, I think you're one of the regular del Toro players.
You know, if there is such a thing as a regular del Toro player, I would be very honored to be included in. I feel like I have been, yes. He's a very loyal type dog that way. If he finds people that he likes and trusts and works with well, he'll keep you in his pool of to be used again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I met him on Mimic back in 1997 when we were filming. I was called in at the last minute when they were doing reshoots in L.A. They filmed it up in Toronto. The problem was that when they were doing reshoots in L.A. for 3 days, the guy who played the Long John bug-like creature mm-hmm. up there in Toronto was also a tall, skinny guy, but he could not work in the States legally. So they had to come looking for someone that could, you know, pull on the bug man sort of slash costume. I was in every creature effects shop's Rolodex, you know, so let's call Doug Jones. I got a phone call at the last minute before a night shoot. And so that started a 3-day filming for me on Mimic. And Guillermo del Toro, that was his first time directing a large budget studio film in the United States. He'd filmed a lot of things independently in Mexico before that, including a movie called Kronos, which had lots of artistic acclaim and lots of critical appeal.
Really like Kronos.
So meeting him, I did not know, I wasn't aware of who he was when I met him, but here was this roly-poly, jolly, hysterically funny 8-year-old boy in a big man's costume. You know, that's what it felt like. And at lunchtime on the second day, he sat there with his chin in his hand, and he said, "So tell me all the movies you've been in." And he wanted to hear all about, you know, and I'm wearing half of a bug costume while I'm eating, and I'm like, what? So he wanted to know all the creatures I played. He loves monsters.
Mm-hmm.
It was like talking to a 9-year-old boy. So I told him, you know, I've been in this movie and that movie, and he's like, "Oh, what makeup artist have you worked with?" So I told him all about Stan Winston, Rick Baker, Tony Gardner, Mike Elizalde. I went on doing all these names of people that have been, you know, Oscar winners, Greg Canham included.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, "Oh, I love his work. Who else?" So he was just kind of excited and bright-eyed. And I thought maybe he wasn't really the director of the film. Maybe a fanboy snuck in and took his place for a minute. Like, security! But that's what was so endearing and lovable about him, is that he is a fanboy first. And, you know, and so he directs and writes films that appeal to his fanboy senses. That's why he is a fanboy favorite.
Of the work you've done with him, of course, with Pan's Labyrinth and the two Hellboy films and Mimic, which was the most difficult to work on?
None of them are easy, but he's, you know, I think the motto with him is, "It doesn't look good until it hurts Dougie."
It's on your business card, isn't it?
I think that's what I believe it's true. Well, I think for intellectually, it was very difficult for me to pull off the Fawn character in Pan's Labyrinth, because I was in a 5-hour makeup and costume to get ready. clumping around on hoof feet. I couldn't sit back and recline all day because I had a tail sticking out of my butt, and I had ram horns on my head that didn't allow me to rest my head anywhere. That was tough. And adding to that, the Spanish dialogue, I had to deliver paragraphs of important dialogue that was all the exposition of the film in Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, Matt.
Really?
No, but I did in that movie because I just memorized the dialogue. So that was a memorization nightmare. By the way, I'm doing that again on this French movie. I'm memorizing all this dialogue in French here.
Not Spanish.
They're going to dub over me later because my accent is completely wrong.
So when you get your awards, you obviously thank your makeup people and your chiropractor and your yoga instructor.
Yes, and God for keeping me alive one more day during every shoot. But, you know, I think when it comes to difficulty and pulling through, it was the Hellboy 2 shoot that was the one that almost killed me, I think. That was 6.5 months we were there in Budapest. And it was a 6-day work week, about 18 hours a day, and I had very few days off. Out of the 128-day filming schedule, I worked 108 of those days. So that meant 4 hours of sleep a night and falling asleep in makeup chairs constantly. And my skin, after being glued and cleaned up and glued and cleaned up and glued and cleaned up day after day, it really took a toll on me. And emotionally, too, it's a lot to bear through. But once I saw Hellboy 2, it became one of those movies that was, you know, a career marker for me. You know, the role of Abe Sapien was so wonderfully written and expanded this time. And in addition to that, I got to play the Angel of Death and the Chamberlain, these other two characters that are just, the Angel of Death especially, delicious.
And nice singing, by the way.
Oh, thank you. And you know what? The first time I heard Can't Smile Without You by Barry Manilow, whom I love and adore, and you do too, Matt, and don't lie and tell me you don't.
Na, 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 na,
everybody na, loves Barry. Na, stop na, it. Na. Just shut up and accept it. So, Barry Manilow, Can't Smile Without You. When I was a senior in high school, that was on the radio in my kitchen at home. And I was like, yes! I would sing that song out loud and wonder why, you know, so, you know, girl X of the day didn't want to spend time with me, right? So it was brought that kind of high school puppy love experience full circle. There I am singing with Hellboy as we lament the loves in our lives and pop open a Tecate beer for the first time.
The day after the Oscars, did you have a dartboard of Brad Pitt?
Oh, no, of course not. There's love for Brad Pitt.
You all love each other.
There's all kinds of love. No, and the makeup artist, Greg Canham, who made up Kate Blanchett and Brad Pitt and took the Oscar home for that. He's a friend of mine. I worked with him on Hannibal and also a movie called, wait a minute, oh, with Kim Basinger. Oh, I played a demon. Okay,
Bless the Child.
Bless the Child.
Ooh.
Thank you. Woohoo!
Wow, that's why I'm here, folks, among other things.
Thank you.
What did you work with Rick Baker on?
I'm sorry.
What did you work with Rick Baker on?
Rick Baker, Men in Black Part 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
That's right. And then I did some test projects for him that never made it to film before that. He's one of those icons that we, you know, in that creature effects makeup business, everybody knows everybody, so when you see him walk in the room with his ponytail and those two shocks of white hair, you can't miss him.
And looking at your resume, you have a lot of cult films. I mean, which are of various degrees. First off, I love Pencilhead.
No, I think Mystery Men was a fun movie. That was one of those little cameos. I love doing cameos. You commit two or three days of your life and you're done.
You got that. I actually was one of 9 people that saw Tank Girl in the theater, as well as Monkey Bone.
Listen, I had so much fun with these.
I know. That's why I'm taking them up. Okay, how mysterious was M. Night working on Lady in the Water?
Oh. Yeah, Lady in the Water, I was one of the Tartutic characters, which are those monkey-like creatures that came out of the trees.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the one being that could overtake the wolf made out of grass. It was a very nature-like a show.
Mm-hmm.
M. Night Shyamalan. It's funny. He's very iconic and he's huge, and he's celebrated and decorated as a director. He was to talk to him. He was just like somebody you would be really good friends with in college. I liked him a lot. I did like him a lot, and he was actually he has a reputation for being for being full of himself. But I found him to be very humble and very very easy to work with. He was very collaborative with us. But again, you've got guys in rubber suits that look like apes, and they're made out of tree bark. If we had a suggestion, he was going to listen to us, wasn't he?
Sure. Now, did you ever see the documentary Operation Filmmaker? I asked this because I was channel surfing and Doom came on.
No, I'm in it. I heard I'm in that.
Yes. This kid didn't. Right? This kid didn't try to fleece you for money, I hope.
No, he did not. No.
Okay. if for those who are listening, there's a documentary called Operation Filmmaker. It's about a young lad who winds up working on a couple of films, including Doom. And, well, he's a loathsome character. At least that's what the documentary presents him as. So there you go.
Now, he was from either Iran or Iraq, right?
Right. And he got picked up because he did the Middle Eastern version of MTV, which should be fascinating. And
right. And
worked on Everything is Illuminated, and then later lost his visa and lent money and got money and worked on Doom, and The Rock was going to – I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson was going to pay him for his film school. And as the documentary went on, you just wanted to smash a guy in the face with a mallet.
I've never seen the whole thing. So you've seen the whole thing?
Oh, yes. Yeah, we had it at the film festival here in town last year.
Was that the Heartland Film Festival?
No, that was the International Film Festival.
Indianapolis. Maybe My Name Is Jerry can play there since it's an Indiana local film, even, right?
Now, yeah, it's possible. And you recently told me you were working on Super Capers?
Well, yes. In fact, this is the weekend to talk about it because Super Capers, it's a superhero spoof movie. It's a comic book film spoof. And in it, I play a knockoff of Agent Smith from The Matrix, and I'm in three pivotal scenes, and it's going to be it has a selected city limited release this weekend, starting Friday, March 20th. Indianapolis is one of the chosen cities to give it this test run in, and if it does well this weekend, it will then open nationwide in a broader release. But it's all over Indianapolis. It's playing like in the Clearwater Crossing, Glendale Mall, Carmel, Noblesville. There's a website. If you go to the DougJonesExperience.com, which is my website.
That's your band, isn't it?
You have to say it in a low advertising voice like that. The DougJonesExperience.com.
It's your trio.
Yeah. If you go there. There'll be information up, clickable to take you to the official website for Super Capers. That'll have all the theaters listed.
Now, in your spare time, have you done the sci-fi conventions and hung out with that lot? And how's that work out?
It's funny because people ask me all the time if the sci-fi and comic book conventions are scary, and they're not. Actually, they're full of eccentric, colorful people, mind you. Yes. But this is a whole phenomenon that I didn't know much about until a couple of years ago, and I have an appearance manager now who specializes in these conventions. So I've done the whole circuit now. It's a great place to publicly and safely meet fans, people who have been buying tickets to go see movies I'm in over the years, buying the DVDs, renting things. Tuning in when I'm on television, and when they come up to my table to look at the 8x10s I have there, or to have me sign something, or they bring in their DVDs or posters from home or whatever, it's just a great time to connect and get loved on. And I don't know who wouldn't like that, you know?
I'm sorry, loved on? What?
Loved on, Matt. Yes, you would be surprised. Well, see, I have a reputation for being something of a hugger, and this gets out there, and so I have many requests for hugs when people come up to me at the conventions, and it's great. It's great, Matt. Stop making fun of me.
I'm not making fun of you, but were you jealous of Billy Crudup's size in Watchmen?
I've haven't seen Watchmen yet.
There's a nickname for the film, but I can't tell you on radio, so I'll save it.
Ooh, that sounds naughty.
It could be. Now, is it true, wrapping things up, is it true you've challenged Bill Irwin and Andy Serkis to, you know, handball matches?
First of all, I don't even know how to play handball. And second of all, I wouldn't challenge Bill Irwin or Andy Serkis to anything. I think they're both geniuses and fantastically wonderful. It looks like, and hopefully I'll get to work with and meet Andy Serkis, hopefully. Keep your fingers crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Unofficially, the word is out there that, you know, that Guillermo del Toro, of course, I mean, he is officially directing the Hobbit movies.
Right.
And but the unofficial part is my involvement. You know, he has said publicly into the press that he's got something for me in the film, but he won't commit to what that is yet out loud. So, or to me. So I don't have a clue what I'm doing or how many characters or when or if or any of that. So, but Andy Serkis and I both get interviewed and asked about each other all the time. So I cannot wait to meet him. And I think I think we're going to be picking each other's brains apart when we do.
Well, if you do,
in a good way. That sounded very cannibalistic.
Well, you did do Hannibal.
I did.
Well, if you meet Andy, tell him any person that holds Naomi Watts in the palm of his hand, it's all right by me.
Okay. Okay, I'll see. And I'll tell him to tune into WFYI. I'll tell him that for sure.
Doug, we really appreciate the time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And Super Capers this weekend. Woohoo!
Doug, can you do a station ID for me?
I can. Hey, this is Doug Jones, and you're listening to Film Sociology on WFYI.